Off the Ball.
GAA.
This whole circuit where guys are going from club to club to club, making a nice few bob, tax-free, completely in contravention of the law of the land, and doing it in plain sight.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball, in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the Koigig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here, and we are going to bring you your weekly dose of everything that is happening in the world of women's football. Now, obviously, this weekend was a little bit of a different weekend with the very, very sad news about the passing of Matt Beard, who has been involved in the women's game for a long time. And I think, you know, people like Mark Skinner put it very well at the weekend when he said he's had the sort of impact on the game, especially in England, but over in the States too, as someone like Emma Hayes has, in terms of how he supported young players, in terms of, I think, the general outpouring that came from across different codes and colours over the weekend. It didn't matter what jersey you were wearing, what club you were from. There was a lot of people that were touched by him in their careers and who really benefited from his influence. So before we will look at the football and everything else in a little bit, because I think, you know, if anything, Matt Beard would want that to be focused on and make sure that that legacy that he helped create lives on. But we are going to take a little bit of time at the start of the podcast just to talk about the influence he has. And I have Karen Duggan and a very welcome return to Scarlett Heron as well to the podcast to talk about things. Karen, I kind of have lost count the amount of times we've talked to various different people, whether it be, you know, Emma Byrne or a lot of the international players, or even we had Julie Flaherty on the podcast quite a lot, who always would have talked about the influence that someone like Matt Beard had. And as I said, it was quite obvious over the weekend that it really was an outpouring of grief from across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, it's any passing is impactful across the game when someone has put so much time and effort as Matt Beard has into the game. But I think you can tell by the tone of all of the messages from former players, kind of the mark of the man that he was and the support that he gave people. You know, it's actually the hardest thing in the world to keep footballers happy as a manager. And the fact that they've all come out and said in a very human way, he supported them, he gave them chances when maybe other people didn't, and seemed to put the person first. And like I said, that is one of the hardest things. It's ruthless. You have to be ruthless to be a manager, but he seemed to strike the balance perfectly between that and showing care to the person. And yeah, every message that you read from players, it's heartbreaking, because you can just tell how genuine it is, and he'll be sorely missed across the footballing community. And obviously, first and foremost, the thoughts are with his immediate family, who are going to have a really, really tough time. But the amount of support in that women's community is there. It is, as much as it's a growing game, it's a pretty tight-knit community, and you can tell from the various players across the various teams, they've all come across his path and have had only positive experiences with him. So yeah, just to echo what you've said in terms of sending our condolences and reiterating, you know, what everyone has said on their socials, and I'm sure in private as well.
Scarlett, when you look at the world that Matt Beard started out in, you know, over a decade ago, but still not that long, he was a full-time estate agent, went into full-time management, then was doing the two at the same time, and has very much been at the forefront of developing the game to where it is now, where, especially in the upper tier of the WSL, you know, the expectation is that you'll have a full-time manager there, that you won't have the requirement to have a side job. And you know, the achievements that he had with Liverpool, the achievements that he had with other clubs as well, like the good and the great of football over the weekend, all had been influenced or had some sort of experience with him.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we talk a lot about trailblazers in the women's game, and we mostly reference players. I think that's been a bit of a buzzword for obviously the Irish team and the women's team a few years ago, but he is definitely one of the trailblazers for the WSL and for women's football in general across the world. And yeah, even like you talk about him being a full-time real estate agent there, and I think he he left his role and sold his house to take the Liverpool job in 2013, and he was only getting minimum wage, and it's just the commitment that he gave. He was all in from the very start to try and obviously help the women's game and to promote it as best as he could. And obviously, Karen and yourself touched on it there, the impact he had on players from every team. I think it was Louise Quinn even put up yesterday, like, she was never managed by him, but she said, like, it's amazing the impact a manager could have on you when he never even coached you directly. And it's, you need more people like Matt Beard in women's football to, you know, it's people like him that really drive standards and drive how the game should be treated and respected. And it's really, really sad news. And he'll definitely be missed by really everyone in the game. And it's, as I said, like, it's characters like that that have helped women's football get to where it is now. And you need more people like him in the game. So it's devastating news, really, for his family especially.
Yeah, I loved some of the stories that came out over the weekend about even how he had treated other managers, because, you know, you'd expect a manager to want the best for the players, but you might not necessarily want the best for your opposition managers. And, like, their story from a year ago of him, Jonas Eidevall was being asked, has anyone ever asked you for, like, a beer after a match? And he was like, yeah, Matt Beard, only person that's ever done it. Mark Skinner had really nice words for him. I think he referenced a fridge that he had in his office that was always good for a post-match beverage. And then, of course, there was that time with Emma Hayes whenever she was feeling unwell before a Liverpool-Chelsea game, and it turned out that after the fact she needed an emergency hysterectomy, but Matt Beard made sure that there was a bed set up for her in his office just so she could relax for a little bit before a game. So I think a real measure of the person when you can do it not only for the people that you have a vested interest in, but also the people around you. And I'm sure the tributes will continue to come over the next couple of days and weeks as people process the news. But as I was saying at the start, and I think, you know, Matt Beard would be the sort of person that would want people to keep talking about the football, keep talking about the players. And obviously he was always a great supporter of young footballers. So to that end, we do have Scarlett back, and she has just started on a very exciting new journey across the pond with him. Scarlett, from what I've heard, you've only been there like a week now, is it? But it seems like you're settling in quite well.
Yeah, it's been a very busy sort of 10 days. There's been three games and a European game as well. So we played Inter Milan on Wednesday in the second leg. Really unlucky not to come away with a draw as well. They scored in the 92nd minute. So, yeah, and then we played Celtic yesterday as well, which is all was draw. So it's been really, really busy. But as I was saying before we came on, like, I'm just delighted with the opportunity really to go and test myself and put myself in a more uncomfortable environment. So yeah, I'm delighted. It's a great challenge, and obviously full-time football as well is something that I'd say every girl in the league of Ireland obviously probably wants, and we can't get that in our league at the minute, unfortunately. So it's obviously a difficult decision to have to leave the league and to leave Rovers, but like, I've loved my time there, and I can't speak highly enough of everyone there, but unfortunately it's just where the league is at the minute, that we're gonna continue to lose players to foreign leagues.
And how have you found, because obviously you talked there about playing against Inter Milan, we saw Glasgow, one of your competitors, coming over here the last couple of weeks with European football, and I suppose the difference there in between the two teams, and like Karen and I chatted about those games as well. Like, I know you haven't been there that long, but you did have Celtic at the weekend, fairly big game, and playing the likes of Inter Milan, or even just the training side of things, have you kind of noticed much of a difference when it comes to that side?
Yeah, I think there definitely is a difference, especially between sort of the top half of the Scottish League and maybe the league here. But I think there's a very big difference between the full-time teams in Scotland and the part-time teams. So obviously the league split in February, so it goes sort of top five, bottom five, split into their own groups and play each other twice again. So there's a huge difference in those top teams in comparison to home, but in terms of the part-time teams, not so much. But I suppose that's the funded that they have. And obviously having your team in full time nearly every single day, you're obviously going to improve a lot quicker. We've seen, obviously, Glasgow played Piemont a few years ago and Piemont brought it to penalties. So I think between now and then, they've obviously gone up and we've maybe not gone to the heights that they have. So I think we can definitely compete with those type of teams. But I think during the week when obviously Athlone played Glasgow, it shows that there is a big gap there. And even in terms of training, like the all training sessions across every level is the same, but it's just the standard of it is a bit different, a bit quicker, a bit sharper, you know.
And how are you finding the full-time football?
Yeah, I'm loving it. I'd say it'll hit me like a train in a few weeks when we get properly trained. I'll probably be knackered, but for the time being, it's been a lot of match day minus ones. So this is actually coming up now. It's going to be our first week of training, myself and Jess Fitzgerald, who obviously went over as well. So it's great as well to have her to be able to relate with, not being the only sort of new girl on the block. But yeah, it's been great so far, and the trainings will get tougher. But that's all you want as a player, is to test yourself and sort of put yourself up against these great players as well.
I think that's a really good attitude, because, you know, there's sometimes we've seen girls leave, and because they've been, you know, the superstars and the standout players like yourself, Scarlett, and Early, they might think that that's automatically going to transfer over. But like you say, you are stepping up. Even just the transition, even if it's not the technical element, it's just that physical, going into training every day, thinking like a professional footballer. So it's really, really refreshing to hear that attitude. And I think that's the kind of mindset that a lot of the girls should have going over. It's a great opportunity. You should see it as that. And yeah, we're all delighted for you, and delighted for Jess Fitz as well. I was kind of saying when she was leaving, obviously we were devastated, but no one was surprised. And again, it's because we expect the best of the young talent coming through to leave, and we have to be happy for them, because if we weren't, we'd fall apart, because it's happening on a rotation basis now, and that's what's keeping our league kind of turning over and stuff like that. We have to come through with the players. It'd be interesting to see how this under 23 league comes in. I have certain thoughts on it, but again, I suppose you could look at it one way and say more football is good. Does it bridge the gap that I think we have in terms of the drop off internationally at 19 to seniors, and plugging that gap and giving people an opportunity there? I'm not sure, but again, it's another development in the league. It's just like you say, Scarlett, we should be concentrating on full time and maybe getting 15s league in earlier, so that we're getting the contact time earlier and developing those skills earlier. But yeah, it remains to be seen. But as for now, well done, Scarlett. We're buzzing to watch you go. And like you say, you're in at one of the top teams, so it's going to be really, really competitive and be so interesting to see and watch all the Irish girls as we go across, if particularly around February time, because obviously we've got a couple of girls at Celtic. We've now got three of you in Hibs, you know, a few in Glasgow as well. So it's a really interesting league for us to watch from here.
We were going to be the Irish Queens of Scotland.
Exactly.
Scarlett's like, well, I know who I want to say right now. Yeah. But it's right up the top at the moment, isn't it? Like, Rangers are the furthest ahead. Like, I think there's 6 points ahead of you, but then there's only like three between that, kind of like close between first and fifth.
Yeah, I think ourselves and Glasgow are playing each other midweek next week. Both the game against them got postponed because both teams were competing in the European competition. So it's really competitive at the top. I think last year it was decided on the last day. Obviously, Hibs beat Rangers and Ibrox, and if they had lost that game, Rangers would have won the league. And if they'd drawn it, I think Glasgow would have won the league. So I think it goes nearly to the final day every year. So that's obviously really exciting, and something that we'd want in our domestic league as well, which obviously Athlone are playing Shells this weekend, and Athlone are a point clear with a game in hand, I think. So you're nearly hoping that Shells win that, so it has to go who's going to slip up next. I think that always adds a bit of excitement and will bring in more people to the games at the sort of end of the season, whereas last year, or when yourselves, Karen, won the league, it was over with a few games to spare, which no one really wants. You know, you want that competitiveness.
Unless you're Karen, then that's exactly what you want.
I was been over quick enough, and yeah.
I think that's actually the year I've seen you the most stressed, to be honest, that we've been doing this podcast.
No, I'm chilling now. I'm grand. No, but yeah, in terms of that game, I'm not sure I'd feel the same, because we play Athlone's second last game of the season. And if they can lift the trophy that day, it'll be televised. I'd like to be part of that. But yeah, it is. It's great. Like you say, you want the competitiveness to keep going. But what we need is more teams to be joining that race as well. So again, a lot of the onus will fall on the clubs and how they're going to bridge the gap between between Shell's Athlone and the rest. Because yeah, that kind of the other challenges fell away pretty early this season. So I guess, yeah, people are starting to look at their rebuild and look at what they're going to do differently next year already.
You mentioned that development league that was announced last week. It's going to come in 2026, and it's kind of being pushed as this thing of, as you say, like bridging the gap. But what? Because I've seen very mixed opinions, and I feel like no one actually knows what to think about it, which is maybe understandable until it actually happens. But
that's how I am.
Are there pros and cons? Like what?
But pros is that there's more football. You know, it's more football, it's more teams, so it's a wider spread. And then contrary, you're looking at, does it dilute things? Does having more teams involved dilute it at a certain point? And also, I'd say the average age of most teams is 20 in the senior level. So are we putting too many games on these girls? How is it going to actually work in practice? I haven't read into it enough, I'll be honest. So like really, really good 16, 17 year olds are on their senior team.
Mm.
So it's just interesting. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out, whether they're just going to be doubling up in matches. Where the value is, I suppose. But then the 19s is gone, and it's hard to know until you trial it, I suppose, to know what we should be concentrating on. If it was adding 15s and 23s, maybe, but it doesn't address the bit where we've got our young girls going over to England before they're ready, maybe, and not being available then to make that step up to the Irish seniors. But hopefully it's positive. I just don't know yet. I don't have my thoughts in order on it yet. I haven't looked into it enough yet.
Is there a benefit, Scarlett, do you think, with the fact that we're getting a lot more teams involved from like very different parts of the country that are going to have to try and field these teams that are under 23s? So like you've Bray, CK United, Cove Ramblers, Drogheda United, Dundalk, Finn Harps, Kerry, Longford, Mayo and St. Pat's. St. Pat's probably being the, kind of one of the odd ones out there a little bit. But in terms of the places around the country that are going to be needing more footballers.
Yeah, and I think it is important as well. Like from my experience, even with playing with UCD with college last year, there was a lot of girls who were of a very good level and who were maybe overage for the under-19s, which now gives them, and they actually, two of the girls have actually quit football altogether because, and one has dropped down to the intermediate league to like Terenure, that sort of level. But it's great now that players now have an option to stay on for an extra 3 years. I think that's probably the biggest like difference. It's really just a switch from a 19s to 23s league. There's not much else really in it. There is, I've seen a promotion relegation thing into the League of Ireland, and I'm not sure how that would work in terms of if, say, Athlone won the development league, but obviously they already have a team in the League of Ireland. So does that mean it's the next best team that aren't already in the league go up? I'm not sure how that would work.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think they said there won't be anything for the first season anyway, so that's one that they kind of have to work out. But like, I understand what you mean completely.
But anyway, yeah, I think it's great. Obviously, it's rural areas have probably struggled to put together teams, and a lot of games probably have been postponed due to lack of players. And I think it's sort of an issue maybe in the likes of Mayo or place like that, where, or even Finn Harps, where a lot of their players are playing GA as well, and they're double committed. So if they have a game on the same day, if they have a GA game on the same game as they have a football game, they'll probably choose the Gaelic. Whereas maybe if this is a bit more serious and a bit more competitive, that maybe it'll entice them into
more incentive.
A bit more incentive. So I think that's probably beneficial. It's just if there is it's getting the football out of people in that area, so obviously it's more opportunity for more players of sort of that age bracket, 19, 20, 21, who, when you're obviously, when you go to college and things, a lot of girls probably drop out of sport, but then when you kind of get settled in life, maybe you want to go back to a sport, and maybe at 22 it gives you a chance to maybe go, oh well, I'll go try out for this team, or you know, there's more opportunities there. I also seen that it's UEFA funded, and I think out of the 300,000 that the league get, I think 100,000 of it is going to go towards this, and then I think like 50,000 goes towards like licensing. And about Karen saying there about the international gap, 100,000 would also probably be enough for an extra underage international squad. So it's kind of wherever you want to put your money, I suppose. But it'll be interesting to see how it does go. But also, when the international setup, I know I'm biased in saying this, but is crying out for an under-21s or an under-23s to bridge that gap, because we're still one of the only nations that don't have one of those.
And I think that's my main gripe. I'm like, that is to me the glaring gap. The league, like I said, because the good talent is playing up age groups. Obviously, it's great to have a spread, but it's still putting a lot of onus on the clubs to step up another team, more coaches of a certain level to help essentially another adult team through, which comes with its own expenses and stuff. So I think, just have to reserve judgment on it a little bit until we see it play out a little bit more. I'm hoping that it's going to be a huge positive. And like you say, I'm with you, Kathleen. Some of the reaction you're seeing is mixed, and I'm mixed in my own head as well.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll talk to someone within the FAI over the next couple of weeks and try and get them on the podcast to talk through their side of things and provide a little bit of clarity.
They're not going to the Eurocta, so they probably have loads of free time.
Exactly. I mean, like, we're much nicer than the Eurocta, I'm sure. They're not obviously terrified of Karen Duggan and what she might say. No, that's fair. I think, like, it is fair enough to reserve judgment on something like this until it actually becomes a little bit clearer. And Karen, you saying there about the onus being put back on the clubs again, that was something that I thought about whenever I saw this being announced. And I do hope that, you know, all these clubs were in consultation with the general process to make sure that it's all set up correctly and that they can actually perform, because it's great having it. But again, we need it to be competitive. We need it to be regular. Like Scarlett was saying, can't have games being called off every other week, because that's going to be more disheartening probably than actually not having the opportunity at all. So we will watch it with interest, as we do with all these things. Okay, we shall look at some of the action that happened across the water this weekend. Obviously, Liverpool's fixture against Aston Villa was postponed due to that Matt Beard news, and there was a moment's silence in the other games that happened after the news broke, and some very nice tributes. There was a round of applause on 47 minutes, because Matt Beard was 47, during the Arsenal United game at the weekend, so there was lots of tributes paid, and I expect those probably will continue for a little bit longer too as people let the news settle. But there was also some quite interesting results, including London City Lionesses showing up for the first time this season with a 2-1 win over Everton, which was unexpected, but you have to say deserved on the day, Karen.
Yeah, definitely. You could kind of sense the goal was coming before it did. And the crosses, they were getting the crosses into the box. They were being quite direct in how they attacked Everton. And they had a chance just before their opening goal. Sangare took a shot. She was up for a corner, and Wheeler had one of the best blocks I've seen. And she would have been fuming then, because from the subsequent corner, London City Lionesses did get their goal. Aslani was putting in good delivery. Sangari was in the front post. You could see it was very much a tactic, because Courtney Brosnan's quite good at coming and collecting. So they were hitting that front post area. They definitely had their homework done. But Everton definitely contributed to the game as well. Like, I don't think we're going to get down on Everton yet. You know, Gago looked lively. Payne looked lively. She had a couple of shots to save as well. But then it just that little bit of class that London City Lionesses, like, these link-ups are going to come with time. You forget that they are a brand new squad. But for the second goal, you know, it was Lindstrom came off the bench. She was really, really influential. She was tearing down that left-hand side, putting in really clever balls, and then Paris into Goodwin. And I think it's a testament to Goodwin. You know, she was there last year. She was the one banging in the goals, and she's maintained her spot as a leading striker in the WSL. So you can see why. She's a really powerful runner. She's good in the air. She's definitely a handful for defenders. So yeah, there's positives. I think we said that there was positives for London City Lionesses, but that what they needed to do was not be overly ambitious in certain games. And when they did, even in this game, when they did look at their best, was kind of on the counter a little bit. When Everton were exposed, they looked like they could really exploit them.
Yeah, Scarlett, we obviously haven't had you on the podcast since London City joined the league. What have you thought about them so far? Like, you know, I think when a new team comes up, you kind of always say avoiding relegation is your number one mission. And then hopefully you can get a season or two under your belt to build from there. But a result like this early on is a real positive for them.
Yeah, I think it's really important, and they obviously had two tough games to start off. I don't think anyone's going to have any gripes for them losing them, and then I think their next fixture is City on Wednesday night, I think. So not an easy start, but I think if you're looking at your first few games, they definitely targeted that Everton game and said, right, we can get a result here. And to be fair to them, I think they were well worth their win. Talk about Isabel Goodwin, I was really impressed with her taking her chances when they came to her, and yeah, a really, really positive talent. And I think in general, it'll be a difficult year for them. But I think that the financial backing, obviously, that they have and the commitment to developing that side, I think will stand to them as a team. And if all those players can click, and we've seen Nikita Paris linking up well with the rest of her team, and if she can be on form as well, I think she'll be really important to bring sort of a bit of experience. Obviously, she's been in the WSL for a number of years, so I think she'll be very helpful to the rest of the girls who probably don't have that experience as of yet, but they'll definitely grow into it. But I don't think it'll be the same as like Palace last year. I think they're a bit more maybe composed, and getting a win against Everton's huge for them, I think, to sort of kickstart their season. And I think just with the commitment behind, obviously, bringing the women's team forward, and I think they'll have a strong campaign if they can get everyone to click together and sort of grow into the league a bit more. But really impressed with them at the weekend.
Yeah, having Michelle Kang in your corner is never a bad thing in this new world of women's football. Manchester City, then, they absolutely annihilated Spurs. And Karen, I'm sure you're absolutely delighted to see Grace Clinton starring.
Yeah. Well, a goal and an assist. She did mess up for the goal they conceded, though.
Yeah.
No, I'm clutching here. City click, City are frightening, because if you look at the people they have on the pitch together, you know, you've got Miedema, they've Fujina, Shaw, Carolyn, Miazawa.
Even losing Hemp didn't take that much of a fizz out of them.
Exactly. Kasper, I scored, you know, coming in from that wing position as well. So when City get a foothold in the game and they are, you know, on the attack, they are frightening, because they have so much talent up there. The thing that we were worried about was when they're getting countered and who's holding. But it was interesting to get Jagielert's kind of views after the game. He kind of talked about City being able to play in different ways. And he said they can play in possession, but also solid in defending. And that's, like, a lot of the goals, again, it looked kind of like counter-attacking football, really quick breaks, and they did a lot of damage there. I mean, I looked at the stats then, and Spurs had more possession, but if you look back at the highlights, it's City chance after City chance after City chance. So they were just really, really effective when they got the ball. And it's because, why wouldn't you get the ball up there? They're going to just the movement. And, like, you've got, what, 5 scorers there, and none of them are Bunny Shaw. She misses a penalty. Like, there could be a lot to come from them. It's just a matter of consistency. But again, they were unlucky against Chelsea. Like, Chelsea just kind of crawled over the line again, as they do. And other than that, City have had a really strong start. Spurs would have liked to have, you know, laid more of a glove, I think, on City this week. They tried to foul them a lot, and they, like, City players were strong enough to kind of get out of those battles, and the referee was paying advantage, and they were able to cause damage there. But again, I think this is one that Spurs just write off as a really bad day at the office.
Yeah, I think for Spurs, the frustration comes that it was such a big defeat. If it was like a 2-1, even a 3-1, it probably wouldn't have felt as bad. But I think
the first half is really disappointing.
Yeah.
You have to you have to give yourself a chance to stay in the game. So after conceding at 23, yeah, you really need to bank up. And then 5 minutes before halftime, you concede two, another two. You know, that's the cliche. It's the worst time to concede. Like, it really is. And to concede two in that time is, yeah, it's very, very disappointing.
And I think with the way
Martin rally in the dressing room when you're 3-0 down against a firing City team.
Yeah. And I think with the way Martin Ho has been talking so far and the fact that they have had two good wins in their opening games, it felt like he thought this was going to be a bit of a different start. So this is, you know, it's harder to say that you're going to be challenging the big guns when you 5-1-1 rather than like a, as I said, like a 2-1 or a 3-1.
No, they're not. They're not going to challenge, but can they be more competitive in the game? I would think so. He seems to want to bring more of a grit to them, which I think is good because they were a little bit flaky at times over the last two seasons. So it's no harm to hear him use those words saying that they weren't good enough in the contest. I thought they were quite physical, but he's obviously expecting more from them. Mm. So it's an interesting point of view from him.
Scarlett, what was your take on this game? I think like we probably kind of been guilty of being like, oh, City, don't really know. Like, did they sign enough big player names, or are they going to click this season? And again, they have to find that consistency, as you said, and maybe this is the start of it.
And maybe it wasn't consistency. Maybe it is the management as well. We've been flip-flopping on Taylor a little bit. He's gone now, so that excuse is gone.
Yeah. I think towards the end we weren't really flip flopping.
No, obviously we're like hideous. Yeah.
I think last year we probably, if Shaw had an off day, I think City had an off day, and they were so reliant on her for goals and contributions, and everything was hemp to Shaw goal. Like that was sort of their go to at all times. And I think
they both got injured.
Yeah. And then they really started to struggle. But I think at the weekend, like, you had hemp go off 20 minutes in with an ankle injury, and then Shaw had a really frustrating night and just really couldn't get her foot on the game, and obviously missed that penalty, which is immaterial now. But to have the likes of Carolyn come on, and like, she was outstanding, she was brilliant. Like, she it's her sheer pace to just get by fullbacks and get the ball into good areas. And even when you have, like you said there, two substitutes coming on the pitch and scoring, like, they now do have goal scorers from all over the park, which I think is really important, and they don't have that reliance on the likes of Bunny Shaw anymore. And I don't know if, obviously, that could be a change of management, could be a bit of confidence instilled in the players. But yeah, really, really impressed by City. But I feel like they always do have a tendency to let us down when we start to back them. So it'll be interesting to see how they do go this year. But I think for Spurs, yeah, it was really dark day. There's not much positives to take from that except for the fact that it's over.
Yeah.
But I think obviously they've had a good start. They hadn't conceded the goal until Friday night. So I think, yeah, Karen's right. Just scrape it off, kind of try to learn from it as much as you can, but just sort of put it in the back of your mind and sweep it under the carpet maybe. So yeah, I think the Spurs have definitely improved on last season. So I don't think that game's not a fair reflection, I don't think, of how their season will go.
No, I'd say Spurs fans as well will feel like they've moved past the days of like shipping 10 goals against the likes of your Arsenals or your Chelseas or something. And that it would have been a stinging one to take, I imagine, over the weekend. Karen, one of your favourite players, well, one of your tips to be one of the players of the season, I will say, Aggie Beaver-Jones was the difference between Chelsea and Leicester in arguably another one of those games where Chelsea just got themselves over the line. I mean, much like Liverpool on the men's side this season, they just seem to be very, very good at popping up and getting those goals when they need them.
Yeah, and again, I suppose, do you think it's because it's an early goal? Do they not like put the foot in the neck a little bit with Leicester? I think a lot of credit does go to Leicester. I think Leipzig was really, really good in goal. But Leicester, again, they contributed to the game. They only had one less shot than Chelsea. Now, on the flip side, Chelsea had 10 shots and 8 were on target. So you would expect a better return than one goal from Chelsea. So you have to give Leipzig a bit of, you know, a bit of kudos for that. But again, Leicester, they're showing their resilience. They're showing how a team at that lower end of the table should play. You know, that result from Liverpool last week with 10 men, like that gives you to have to show that grit earlier in the season. It gives you a belief that you can do that in any game and under any circumstances, even if it is against Chelsea. Look, the goal was scrappy. It wasn't a classic by any means. But when you went to the side angle, like it looked like a tap in for Beaver Jones at the end. But when you went to the side angle, as Chelsea played that ball around the box, if you just look at her movement, she is so alive. So it's not a surprise that even though the ball pinballed off a Leicester defender, that she was the one to get to it first, because she's so, so sharp in those situations. And like, Chelsea are 3 from 3. Aggie Beaver Jones is goals in each of those games. That's what you want from your starting centre forward, as you give Sam Kerr time to kind of find her feet as well. Again, yeah, not overly comprehensive, but they do. It's what they do.
Scarlett, we've seen this from Chelsea before, where they are able to get the goals that are needed to get them the wins, to go on these incredible record-breaking runs. But I think in previous years, we've probably seen it later in the season happening for them, whereas it does feel a little bit this season, even though they are consistently winning. And again, I could definitely be accused for plucking at straws here, but it does feel like this side is starting a little bit sooner for them than it normally would.
Yeah, and to be fair, I've seen Sonia Mbastra after the game said that she's trying out a different system and that they're missing a bit of connection at the minute. And that was obviously her sort of excuse for what I thought was a really poor performance. Like, it was very basic level stuff that was going wrong for them, even in the second half of the game as well, when you bring on the likes of Alyssa Thompson and Sam Kerr. I know obviously Sam's coming back from injury, but even Rita Kanerud, I was thinking, right, okay, here comes, they're going to pile on the pressure here. But it was passes going astray, out for throw-ins. It was just everyone was on a different page.
I felt like they were forcing it a bit at times, like, yeah, like different page. And
I actually thought Leicester set up really well. They didn't really press from the front, but it was sort of setting triggers that they wouldn't press Emily Bright coming out with the ball, but if it went to a fullback, then they'd pile the pressure on then. And I was really, really impressed with how they set up and went after the game. And even the commentators were saying during the last maybe 15, 20 minutes, oh, Chelsea always seems to do enough. It's kind of what we're saying here. But then, like, 2 minutes ago, like, Leicester hit the crossbar, like, Hannah Hampton pulls out a great fingertip save onto the bar, and like, it's, they got lucky, like, definitely.
Yeah, you feel like it's going to catch up on them, but just because of what we've seen from the last few seasons, we're afraid to put our neck on the line and say you're not playing well, because then they'll go and win the league by like 10 points.
Yeah, and I get it's probably you make your own luck and everything, and they have just been so, so consistent. But I was really underwhelmed with their performance as a whole, and even as you said, the goal isn't like a classic, like, great move through the different phases and lovely cross in and one touch finish. Like, it's scrappy, and like, they didn't really have any other clear cut chances and really lacked a bit of urgency as well. Obviously did the job, 3 points, it's the same as if they won 6-0, but a bit unconvincing for me, but I'm sure they'll win like 7-0 next weekend, so.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it there, and I was like, if Chelsea don't win the league this season and it's a team other than Arsenal, I'll actually be really annoyed. Like, I would rather see Chelsea win it again than see a United or a City win it. It'll be more interesting by the end, but it'll also be more devastating to me.
Well, Arsenal are going to want to show a little bit more.
Well, Karen, why don't we get into it?
Just, like you say, they are the team that we thought, you know, Chelsea are they're the closest to Chelsea. Obviously, they have been for a number of years, and they're the European champions. I thought that, and do think that should be the springboard for them to go and make this the season, because it's so hard for Chelsea to continuously win this. It really is. Like, we mess and we say, no, they're not playing well, but like, there has to come a time where it all catches up on them. Like, you're not entitled to that success. They've had to really earn it and work for it, and there can be an element of fatigue that sets in. But Arsenal, for the talent that they have, they took in, you know, a pretty drab affair with Man United yesterday. Obviously, you always think a nil all, you look at it on paper, you think, oh, maybe it was end to end, or maybe it was just tactically good, but they just cancelled each other out at times. There was no sustained period of dominance, which you expected Arsenal to maybe have, and Man United have to ride the wave. It was kind of ebbing and flowing. Obviously, Arsenal had more possession without any cutting edge. You know, neither keeper had a huge amount to do, which I think is quite telling.
Yeah, and we should say, when we're going into this game as well, like, it was obviously a strange affair with, like, multiple players on both sides, having known Matt Beard, a lot of the coaches in the background had also worked with him a previous time. So I don't know if anyone was expecting, with the news that had come in that 24 hours, for a goal fest, but I definitely agree with what you're saying that Arsenal needs to take these moments better. And they've kind of shown in previous seasons that when they do come up against the push a little bit, they do find it very difficult when a team just shuts them down, Scarlett.
Yeah, definitely. I think last year we spoke a lot about United's sort of strong defence, and it, to be fair, it seems to be continuing theme into this year. To be fair, I think it was more of a defensive game than anything, but neither team really had any big chances there. I think if you're a neutral at the game, you're probably leaving pretty early. It's not really one that was very eye-catching, but I thought for Katie Reid, I thought she did really well. Obviously a really, really young player, and looked really composed. And I know in the first game of the season, she gave away a penalty early on against London City, and you feel a bit sorry for her because, like, you don't know how she's going to react to it. But I think she's really grown into that team, obviously replacing Leah Williamson, who's out at the minute. But a really, really good performance from her. And I think it just shows, like, the trust that obviously Arsenal have in her, and the sort of ability that she does have, that she can play that sort of leadership centre half role and sort of be that commander in that back line. So yeah, I think it probably was more of a tactical game than anything. Both teams kind of just cancelling each other out. Nothing much to report about.
I think Reid had the measure of Mallard, which is why I think maybe Turland could have been used a little bit earlier. You know, she was off the back of a hat-trick midweek, got Man United through to, you know, the Champions League, which was a huge thing for them, especially after the away loss to Brune. So I understand why they went for Mallard, you know, counter-attacking, trying to get her running at Arsenal. And she did it well at times, probably didn't get the support, and Reid played really well. But I think they were there to be got at a little bit more. Again, I thought other players played well, though. I thought Park does look really, really busy. I think she fits in very well. It was Rolfo's first start of the season, and I loved her composure. There was no point, like, didn't matter who she was facing up, she kept the ball really, really well. There was some really good triangles down the left hand side, but then it was that final bit in the final third, who was going to make the penetrating run or just take the shot on. And it was neither of teams did. It's like they didn't want to take the chance, you know, to break out of defense, get their fullbacks more forward, more into the game. And you can understand it, a loss for either one of these teams this early in the season to each other, does it set kind of a tone of where they are, particularly if United had lost to Arsenal. Again, it's just, this is the order of merit, and this is how it's going to be. It's going to be Chelsea, Arsenal, City, United. But now you're kind of, as United, you're saying, right, we've got the measure of them a little bit. It's a better point probably for United than it is for Arsenal.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think it made the rest of the season much more interesting, providing that someone can take points off Chelsea at some stage. And we're not once again being like, ooh, Champions League spot, that'll be interesting. Or, ooh, relegation battle, that'll be interesting. Because
yeah, no, we want a title race.
Yeah, we want some sort of a title race. But it is nice seeing United, I suppose, well, I'd rather they didn't do it against Arsenal, starting to live up to some of the expectations.
But then am I being a bit passive really as well? Like, if Man United ever do want to take that step, they have to start beating these teams.
Yeah.
Oh, they've done well against Arsenal in the past and they have beaten them, but make a point of doing it at home, particularly in front of a record crowd. But like you say, it was a weird game, so they'll have to take good positives from it, in fairness.
But I think it is interesting out the other side of the game that the main storyline anyone really wanted to concentrate on, more so than any criticism of either team, was the Katie Reid performance and the likes of Jess Park, and how much her and Mallard did, like, give, especially in the first half, gave Arsenal, like, a lot of trouble. So, yeah, it was an interesting day. I was hoping for a better result because
boring match.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it wasn't a great weekend for me in general, Karen, with my team, so you know.
Yeah, the men came back from behind. It was exciting, at least.
Yeah, that's like when I say the title race the year you won it was exciting, and you're like, no, yeah. it was just stressful. Okay, and then final game of the weekend was absolutely hammering from Brighton towards West Ham, who are not looking too hot right now. Obviously sitting on the bottom of the table with 0 points, alongside Liverpool. I said earlier that Liverpool game this weekend was it was postponed, so they do have a game in hand. But yeah, West Ham relegation candidates.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I said I don't want to say that this early, but from what we've seen, you know,
there was also with this game you can say stuff quite early because there is so few games.
Yeah, well, both teams neither had a win going into it, but in fairness to Brighton, you know, they got a point against Villa and they had led versus City, whereas in the West Ham games we were kind of like what are they showing, where are the wins going to come from? And they were very loose in possession in midfield. It wasn't that Brighton had to carve them open. Brighton were bright on the attack, but like Gari and stuff, she was trying to play one touch football rather than just establishing possession. They were just getting themselves in all sorts of trouble. And Brighton just looked like the more mature team there and really punished West Ham. Fran Kirby, obviously, she recovered from a knock. She delivered the corner that Hayes got. Hayes' first start, obviously, it's great for us. Not only to see her on the team sheet, see her scoring, trademark header for her, that was great. But for the second goal, Seki, like, she was good. It was a good 1-2 in the box, but you have to say West Ham, they just weren't close enough. I don't know what the identity of West Ham is.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Scarlett? What did you think about this game?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Obviously the first half was not great for West Ham. The second half a lot better, obviously made it triple change at half time, brought on a bit more pace. But yeah, I'd agree with the lack of identity line. But I thought, yeah, Brighton were fresh. They looked sharp. I thought they were really good interplay, especially out wide with Seek as well. I thought she was really, really good. And yeah, just obviously better ball retention as well. I think they were just they put West Ham under a lot of pressure, but West Ham did cough up the ball an awful lot. And it's times maybe when you're losing, you need to say, right, you need someone like Gary in midfield with that experience to say, right, let's calm this down. Like, let's try get the ball and let's try keep it and get everyone's confidence back up, get a foothold on the game. But
nothing wrong with a long ball the odd time. Let's get some willing runners up top, someone who can, you know, just get primary possession, hold it up. Like sometimes you have to acknowledge that that's where you are. Well, and I think we said that
balls into channels, they got a penalty from it. So
yeah, and that was a madness by the Brighton keeper, I have to say as well. I don't know where she was going for that. But yeah, there was some decent strikes. Kafaji, yeah, really good counter press by Brighton. Like you say, they just had a bit more about them. That allowed them to get into it than West Ham. So yeah, worrying times for West Ham, I do think.
Well, I was happy to see Kafaji get on the pitch and get the goal and helped out with some of the other ones, just because she obviously sat on the bench at Arsenal for like the guts of a year, didn't really get an opportunity to do anything, and now is over at Brighton, I suppose, an attempt to kind of prove herself within the WSL. So it is always nice to see a player like that who takes a risk with a big move and hopefully will continue to pay off, although so long as Brighton don't suddenly start training up all our great players and they decide to leave and want to stay with them. But yeah, definitely worrying times for West Ham. That is all we have time for this week on the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Karen and Scarlett, thank you very much for joining me. I know not the easiest of weeks to do this, but it is always appreciated. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official sponsor to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. To say, I know we didn't mention the Ballon d'Or, but that is because we are actually recording this on Monday evening and it will come out on Tuesday morning. So that's why I didn't bother asking anyone their opinions, because it'll kind of be out of date fairly quickly, and I don't want to embarrass you guys in the morning if you get it totally wrong, but very curious to see how that goes later on this evening. Saw some good videos of all the Arsenal gals getting ready together, which looked like a lot of fun, and I wish I was joining them. But anyways, that's all from us for this week, and we will see you all again very, very soon.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.